But I feel like, I mean, I feel like there are even people in conservative media that don't pay enough attention to this story.
Well, the polling, all the polling, there's a lot of election polling going on right now, as you know, is showing this to be really ranking for Republicans. It's right up there with inflation and the oil prices and all the gas prices and all, it's right up there. But for Democrats, it's way down in the below the top 10. So it's just falls right on partisan lines. It is a top issue though for Republicans. It's animating Republicans a lot, but if you judge it by the polling.
I mean, I can't think. I mean, as you say, it's one of the top five, I think, stories that are facing the country right now, because we, for all intents and purposes, we have an open border on the southern border at this point, don't we?
We have very wide channels dug in through the levees, and it's flooding through, flooding the Ninth Ward,
So tell, well, so there's a few things that I want to, have you talk to us about, but I guess we should start at the beginning. Give us a little refresher on Title 42, what it was and where things stand now, what it is and where things stand now.
Right, that's a pandemic control statute, Title 42, that was actually passed in 1944 and had never been used until Donald Trump invoked it in March of 2020. And it just allows the executive to close the border in times of pandemic. And the point of it is to obviously keep the country safe from diseases that are deadly diseases coming in. And it was it the way it works is an immigrant comes across the border, or somebody crosses the border, and Border Patrol can turn them around in within 15 minutes. It's instant expulsion, and take them to the nearest port of entry and put them back. And that's don't pass go. You just go straight back to Mexico. You don't get to claim asylum or anything that would allow you to stay for any period of time inside the United States. And it's blanket. It's everybody, except some. There are always exceptions, for humanitarian, somebody's dying, or some really extreme situation where the executive can make a decision to just waive everything and bring somebody in. But for the most part, everybody goes back. Nobody gets asylum.
And so the Biden administration has been trying to expire Title 42, or at least poke enough holes in it so that the practical effect is that it's no longer policy.
Right. Well, remember Biden came into office where his number one issue was that he was going to protect the country from the pandemic. And so it, even though he was under pressure to reverse Trump's Title 42 invocation, he kept it because it would have gone directly contrary to his biggest policy, number one policy agenda. So Biden kept Title 42 in place. However, he chopped big giant canals through it for people, made big exemptions in it. And just the exemptions that he carved out of it, responsible for the greatest mass migration crisis in terms of numbers in American history. And that's with Title 42 still in place here and there for different other kind of categories. It was enough. The exemptions that he cut out in the very first days of office was enough to cause this, where we are now.
And how many people are coming across the border on a daily, weekly, or a monthly basis, whatever your best numbers are at this point?
Well, where we are now, there's new numbers that just come out. We're probably standing at about close to 8,000 a day coming across. To give you a little bit of perspective about what that means is, you know, a couple of years ago when there was a mass migration crisis under Donald Trump, Jay Johnson, who was the DHS secretary under Obama, was asked, you know, how bad is this? And he said, well, when I was secretary, if we had under 1,000 a day, you know, that was a good day. But if we had anything over 1,000 apprehensions a day, I was going to be in a bad mood all that day. 1,000 seemed to be his mark. And we've been, you know, blowing past that by, you know, quintuple and sextuple. And I don't know what it is for seven, but, you know, now we're pushing 8,000 a day, and it just goes, it's month after month of that. To give you an idea, we've had about, in a 12 month period, just from here back 12 months, we've had about 2.5 million arrests, Border Patrol laying hands on an immigrant crossing the border, 2.5 million in a 12 month period. The last time we had anywhere close to that was the year 2000 in a 1 year period. And that was about 1.6 million. So we've blown past the last highest previous record by a million. But if you start from the day that Joe Biden took office, which is actually the day that the crisis started, we're way past that. We're looking at about 3 million apprehensions at the border just since Joe Biden. And, you know, that's so far and above, you know, any prior record. I mean, there's nothing we started keeping records in 1960 of apprehensions, and this just blows past anything that we've kept record of since 1960.
I mean, these are just astronomical numbers. And of course, the apprehensions and the people coming over the border is just the first part of it. What really gets me is that there seems to be an organized effort to take people who are crossing the border at these border sites and quickly disseminate them and disperse them deep into the country. And you have, I mean, I'll let you fill us in, but there seems to be organizations that are helping with this and American travel companies that are helping with this as well.
Right. So the policy is very checkerboardy all along the border. There's nothing, it's schizophrenic. It looks schizophrenic from the outside that it's just, but the reality is that because of Title 42, even if I throw the number 3 million at you, apprehensions in that time span, that's not the number that actually all got in and resettled inside the country. That number is considerably smaller, but it's still astronomical. So the number that the administration since inauguration day has let in and resettled, paroled, allowed to come in and stay in the United States for an indefinite period, right now is about 1.5 million. So it's probably about half or maybe a little bit less than half of the total number of apprehensions. But if you just take that 1.5 million, it still blows away everything and anything that we've ever seen before in this country. That number, the last time we had a really big number like that was actually under Donald Trump, and it was about 977,000 that got into the country in a very short time span. And it was a terrible mass migration crisis. A lot of people got in to the country illegally and got to stay in by virtue of having just swamped everything. And we didn't have anybody around to push them back, or we just didn't have the infrastructure to get them out or stop them. But he tried, is the point. And he put policies in place, and some were very innovative, you know, remain in Mexico and third world safe, third country safe, third safe country deportations on asylum, and he really had Mexico put their military on the southern border, and taken all together, he got the numbers very quickly down to manageable 30,000 or 40,000 a month, which is still pretty high, but you know, nothing like what we're seeing now. I think we're like this, the month of May just came in. The numbers are like 236,000, you know, for a month, like a 4 week period, you know. That's where we are. We're at like over 200,000 a month for just like a year and a half. So
unbelievable.
It really is. I mean, the numbers, but Title 42 is still kind of a speed bump, and there are a lot of expulsions under it. It's just a question of who's being expelled and where. And it's like all over the map from day to day, one day to the next. Nobody knows who's on the bad list and who's on the good list, who's on the Schindler's list this week or this day. But the point is that 1.5 million, in order to move them into the country for their quote unquote asylum, which probably none of them are eligible for, they're just abusing the system. And I can explain that to you later if you want, but you need the help of the nonprofit industry or industrial nonprofit complex, I sometimes call it, which is to say that, you know, those organizations are very willing to come in and help arrange for transportation. They're helping the migrants. The Border Patrol hands them off a couple days after catching them at the border, and those organizations then will arrange for, here's the bus that you need to take to get to wherever you're going. Here's how to get money from your relatives to buy the ticket. American Airlines is over here with a flight. If you want to buy a flight, we'll help you put it all together. You're a foreigner and a stranger. That function, it's a very important function, is now being expanded from the border to cities, major cities across America. Because so many are coming that they need to keep them off from congregating and overflowing at the border, that they're preparing to start putting them on flights to the nonprofits who will help them arrange more flights and bus tickets to get to where they need to be. So this conveyor belt that I've reported on, I've showed video, I don't know if you've seen it, but that is about to get replicated and expanded to major cities across the country because the administration sees its duty for all these people coming in, not as stopping them from coming, but in facilitating what they call the humane and orderly management of these flows. It's all in. None of it is out. And that's really different. We've never had a president or an administration take that position on illegal immigration, not ever in this country. Even Democrats would never do anything like that. This is like, you know, some kind of an alien inhabited, you know, took over the White House or something. Or
I mean, we're really in bizarro land now where everything is upside down. And I, you know, to that point, one of your videos I was taken with, it's a small thing, but I think it speaks volumes. There's a welcome sign at one of these processing facilities. And I thought, welcome. These are people who are crossing illegally. And we have a giant sign that says, welcome. If I'm one of these folks, the first thing I do when I see that sign is I take out my phone and I call whoever is back home and I say, hey, you know, I'm in and they're welcoming us. You need to get up. I mean, that's a human reaction. It's what I would do. You need to get up here ASAP.
Well, that's how it works. That's why escalating numbers that's why the numbers are escalating, because, you know, people inside the bus going to New York or New Jersey or wherever, Florida, are taking video of themselves going, yay, with their thumbs up and sending it all to the village back home, who are then going to raise the money and pay the smugglers and replicate that success. That's fabulous success. To be on one of those buses is the grand prize to all of the world's poor. So it's tantamount to like if the 1850s California gold rush, if those people back then had cell phones, that they'd all be, you know, posing with the giant nugget that they found in the river. You know, I mean, it doesn't take much to spur a gold rush, man. Just word that somebody found a nugget, and that's all it is. It's human nature. That's what's happening.
That is such a smart analogy. And, you know, and so to that point, the people that you see in these videos lining up, they all have smartphones. They all, I hope this doesn't sound too insensitive, but they don't look like they're not emaciated. They don't look like they're starving. They have clothes on their backs. The point I'm trying to make is that this is not what the asylum, it seems like the criteria that they had was that they just wanted to come here. And that's not what the asylum system is about. It's not why it was created, and it's not what it was for, is it?
No, the asylum system is created for Jews fleeing Hitler's and for, you know, defectors from North Korea, you know, fleeing the execution squad, or the Rohingya Muslims fleeing the Burmese junta, you know, ethnic cleansing and that kind of thing, not for people who's who just like want, they just want, you know, all you can eat Chinese buffet stuff. You know, I mean, really, I don't mean to be insensitive either, but like, we have a great country here. We all know that we are the land of plenty, and so does everybody else. But, you know, even if, I mean, a lot of these people are doing, they're fine. They're not starving. They're not being beaten. They're not being persecuted. We can certainly feel empathy for being poor and having to grow up and just be stuck in a country that where the governance is dysfunctional and the court systems don't work and you can't afford a car and, you know, all that kind of thing. And there's no future. I get it. We all get it. But at some point, the lifeboat that fills up with too many people sinks. So you have to say to the person who's drowning there, you took the last one, you know, you, I mean, what, it's just, it's, that's the way it is. It's hard.
It's that's the exact analogy that I draw when I talk about this issue. So it's very interesting that you use that same exact analogy. Tell us a little bit about, Todd, tell us a little bit about the Del Rio sector. What do the American folks need to know about that?
Well, the Del Rio sector is special. There's 9 border patrol sectors from the Gulf of Mexico to the Pacific Ocean. And most of them, I would say 8 of the 9, I mean, I'm talking about on the southern border. There's fewer on the northern border. But 8 of the 9 are controlled by Mexican drug cartels. That if you were to try to cross on your own without paying that cartel to cross, you know, you could get killed or beaten or, you know, kidnapped and forced to, you know, extorted and that sort of thing. It's dangerous to try to cross in all of these places. And it's very expensive. Also, the cartels have a monopoly on the best crossing points, and they'll charge you $5,000, $2,500 a head to cross in a lot of these places on pain of death if you don't do it. So the Del Rio sector is special because they don't have that there. In the Del Rio sector, you can cross on your own for free.
And where is the Del Rio sector geographically?
Kind of picture, you know, the Texas arm, or the Big Bend, you know, that where it bends, and it's kind of the armpit part a little bit south of there. You know, I have to say it like that, but it's north, it's upriver from Laredo 3 or 4 hours, and it's It's downriver from El Paso. It's like kind of in between those places. And it's not the busiest sector, but it is cartel free for the most part. They traffic in drugs there, but it's cheap. And it was discovered, you know, about a year ago, maybe, you know, as a place that you didn't have to pay these astronomical sums and risk getting beaten and all the rest of that. So it's kind of an easygoing spot. And that's why it attracts all of these immigrants coming through. It's cheap. It's the cheap way to do it.
And have the cartels moved in after this influx of people there? Are they kind of filling that void, or are they still?
No, it's still open. I was just down there a couple of weeks ago. And, you know, the issue there is, you know, cartel operations. And this is just what I hear from, you know, I don't interview the cartel guys. Not usually. I try to avoid them as best I can. But from what I understand, that Del Rio section is a place where on the Mexican side, the cartel actually is the police. It's the state police and federal police. And they have replaced, they are the cartel there. They do all the drug trafficking. And they keep out these other like Sinaloa and Gulf Cartel and the rest of that. And they can't really be seen getting involved hands on with individual immigrants all the time. So they just let it go. And then the other reason is that that area is a southbound delivery point for cash from the drug trade. So they get all the cash from all the drug trafficking gets moved southward to the cartels through Del Rio. And also a lot of guns, all the weapons get that they arm themselves with come through down there. And what I understand is that they don't want to, you know, be murdering and extorting and doing a lot of crazy stuff in that spot. They just want it to be real calm and real normal and nothing too overt so that the money can come through there. So between those two things, they just leave it alone and you can cross there.
It's like a black market duty-free zone.
Yeah. Yeah. Something like that. I mean, that's all speculative, but that's what I hear from people who study these things.
So where do you see this going based on your reporting, Todd? How are we trending here? I know DHS Secretary Mayorkas, he seems to be, you know, full throttle on this plan of disbursement of migrants deep into the country. Obviously, it doesn't seem like the flow is abating in any way. How does this play out over the next 6-8 months?
Well, the entire universe of aspiring migrants who want to come to the United States were very aware. It was very aware of Title 42. It really just triggered a lot of talk and discussion about how open the border was about to become. If you thought it was open before, you ain't seen nothing yet, kind of thing. So they started to come just on the whiff of a like it's going to open even more. The Title 42, it's important to know, had not been evenly applied. It had mostly targeted single adults. They exempted in families, and pregnant women, and unaccompanied minors who were mostly teenagers. But a lot of families and that was mostly in Texas. But in other parts of the border, they did 42 families and they did 42. When I say 42, I mean, they expel, but all through the border, they generally expelled singles, single adults, men and women. They were the ones. And it gets complicated from there. But recently the administration started letting single adults through, And this is a new, this is something new. And the word of that spread has really spread. And so you see a lot of the, that caravan down there of 15,000, that consisted of a lot of single adults from the countries that are being exempted. So Venezuelans are exempted, Colombians, Africans, Middle Easterners exempt from Title 42, Ecuadorians, Peruvians, anybody who's not from Central America, except for Nicaraguans, you know, Cubans. So if you're from those places, word got out that they were going to let you in, even if you were a single. And that's a brand new thing. So this has, it's like the gold nugget picture, you know, like, look what I got. And so it just seems like it is only going to escalate from here. I don't see a way out until they close all those exemptions and actually start making these immigrants lose their smuggling money. And that's what it really all comes down to. I think I said this before, this is always centrally about economics. It just is the fundamental, like, numeral in
driving force
in the calculus. If your money's going to pay off, you're coming. If you're going to lose your money and have to go back, it's not worth it. You're going to stay home. And we're not doing that. We're making it, you got a 65% chance. That's, you know, I'd invest in a stock that had a 50, 65% chance of it rising in value. You know, they're not dumb. I mean, very few of them are, you know, completely ignorant about these things. I mean, they're putting down $10,000 that they don't have.
Right. They obviously have more to gain than they have to lose.
Well, yeah, because, you know, even if you're mowing lawns and for cash 5-6 days a week, you know, you're going to pay that debt off pretty fast and then have all kinds of, you're going to earn many, many, many multiples of that. Not to mention you qualify for public welfare and, you know, everybody's all, you know, we're very generous here. Nobody's going to go without. And your kids are going to have good schools and scholarships and everything else. So,
well, thank you for taking the time, Todd. This is an all too important story. And all the attention that your work gets, it doesn't get nearly enough. So please tell the folks where they can find you and where they can follow all your great reporting on the story. Because as we spoke about yesterday, you're really one of the few that are on this story as closely as you are.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great story, though. You know, if you're, I mean, it's just got all the elements, you know, it's drama. You know, this is a great story. So I'm glad to have it all to myself if necessary. Mm-hmm. You know, I get what you're saying. But you can reach me. I have a couple social media places where I post. One is Getter, T. Benzman at Getter. And also Benzman Todd at Twitter. I also have LinkedIn. I like LinkedIn, and I post there too. And you can find all my writings at toddbenzman.com.
Well, thank you once again, Todd, for taking the time. Please come back real soon and keep us updated.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.